gentlemen, what you gonna do?
Here we are, the 40th anniversary of the birth of Hulkamania. Regardless on how you feel on Hulk Hogan, Terry Bollea, you have to admit he is an icon to the sport and quite possibly still the most recognized figure of all time. There's not much that he hasn't done. He headlines multiple promotions. He at one time was the most loved babyface, the most hated heel, heavyweight champion, tag team champion, led a battle against the baddies, was the leader of the baddies, even had a great comeback story, and then tried again in TNA. Didn't work out, but we'll get there. Most people think that his story, I mean, a lot of times when they talk about Hogan, I'm sure you hear, he was trained by Hiro Matsuda, he got his leg broke. He kind of ran away, came back, did the WWF run, the AWA run, went back to WWE. But there's a lot more to the Hulkster. And, you know, I figure we'll do kind of a part one here. We'll discuss his the beginnings, the prelude to Hulkamania. And then afterward, we'll kind of talk about his... I guess we'll call it his post-WrestleMania 19 run.
Okay.
Because kind of after the Vince McMahon match, I mean, he had a couple matches here or there, but nothing huge. Kind of like we did with Ric Flair about a year, year and a half ago, where we talked about his later career. But to start, as I said, he was trained by Hiro Matsuda. Matsuda was one of the more legendary Japanese wrestlers of his era. He actually led the stable, the Yamasaki Corporation, which was what the Four Horsemen became after Tully Blanchard and Arn Anderson left. It was about 76, 77. As I said, Hiro did break his leg, and he was out for 10 weeks. And Hogan actually had to block Hiro Matsuda from trying to break his leg again.
Brother.
So, I mean, he paid his dues. He was actually discovered by the Briscoe brothers, Jack and Jerry, down in Florida. And, you know, they wanted him to try wrestling. And the son of the championship wrestling from Florida promoter, who is Eddie Graham, Mike Graham, he refused to put Hogan in the ring. The story goes there's something about Hogan and Graham meeting while in high school and they didn't get along together. Would you believe that two wrestling personalities were divas?
I find it hard to believe. They're all usually pretty even-keeled kind of guys.
It was actually, like I said, it was mid-77 when he actually debuted.
Oh, yeah. Or 60s and 70s wrestlers known for their even keel
temperament. Yeah.
Sure. Yeah.
I guess it goes that the Briscoes stopped by Matsuda's to see how Hogan was getting along, and Jack handed Hogan a pair of wrestling boots and told him he was scheduled for his first match the next week. In his debut, he fought Brian Blair. This was August 10th of 1977. If the name Brian Blair kind of sounds familiar, it's because he was the one who supposedly spoiled the Ric Flair last match by saying it was going to be Hogan versus Flair.
Okay.
I don't know if you remember that interview where he's like, "Oh, Terry," and the guy's, "Oh, Terry, is it Hulk? Oh, I shouldn't have said that." Yeah, it got me excited. Hogan wasn't there. That's fine. Hogan later donned a mask And he was the Super Destroyer, which was a character that was portrayed by many people. Hogan eventually got tired of working for Mr. Matsuda, who he felt was overbearing, and he left Championship Wrestling from Florida. He declined wrestling in Kansas City, and he actually took a hiatus from wrestling, which I've noticed with a lot of the like bigger wrestlers, your Cena's, your Rock's, even your Stone Cold's, your Hogan's. Wrestling doesn't always work out. They leave, they take that break, and then they come back. It's kind of weird that it always works out that way. Hogan opened a gym, and Hogan's friend, Ed Leslie, who you'll hear a lot of, I'm sure, as Brutus the Barber Beefcake, came and helped Hogan out at his gym. Hogan and Leslie actually ended up teaming together. They wanted to wrestle, and Hogan, who had bumped into Billy Graham a couple times at the gym, called Superstar and hoped that Billy Graham could find him a job in wrestling, but outside of Florida. And Hogan was recommended to the Alabama Territory. Now, I don't know a lot about the Alabama Territory, but what I do know is if you don't know a lot about the territory, it's probably because it wasn't very popular and a lot of wrestlers didn't want to be there. So it's probably not the best spot for Hogan to really begin his journey again. But Hogan and Brutus Beefcake, who he convinced to come with him, would go on to wrestle. They were known as the Boulder Brothers, Terry and Ed Boulder. So even early on in Brutus Beefcake's career, he was riding the coattails of Hulk Hogan. You know, they wrestled for Continental Wrestling Association, which is in Memphis, Jerry Jarrett's promotion, and he actually approached them and offered them a job. They left Alabama territory. Hogan actually appeared on a local talk show during this time, and he sat next to none other than Lou Ferrigno, the Incredible Hulk. It was at this time that he started performing as Terry the Hulk Boulder. So this is where the Hulk moniker came. His first championship was the NWA Southeastern Heavyweight Championship, Northern Division. Can't forget that. Which was recognized in Alabama and Tennessee. He briefly appeared in GCW before first appearing in the WWF. That's kind of funny. The Briscoes discovered him, and the man who recommended him to Vincent J. McMahon was none other than Terry Funk. So, I mean, you've got three NWA champions recognizing that Hogan's got something. It's a pretty good start to a career. Vince loved him, and the big disagreement at the time was Vince J. wanted Hogan to dye his hair red so he could be Irish. Hogan's hair was already falling out, so he refused to dye it, simply saying, "I'll be a blonde Irish."
That's crazy. That's absurd.
His first WWF match under the name of Hulk Hogan was on November 17th, 1979. He made his first appearance at Madison Square Garden. Here's a fun trivia fact for you. Defeating Ted DiBiase by bear hug. So like I said, it's just interesting that Hogan's career is always... He's got these big names surrounding him. And Brutus Beefcake. I guess after the match, Hogan thanked DiBiase and told him he owed him one, which a lot of people feel Hogan repaid to him during DiBiase's second run with the company. I don't know if they mean Hogan got him a job, because as far as I know, Hogan never jobbed to DiBiase. So
Hogan doesn't job.
No, brother. Jobs. McMahon gave Hogan a mentor to kind of follow him around, which at that time, if you're given a mentor, that means that the promoter kind of saw things in you. He didn't want you to, you know, run off and get wasted at a bar or get beat up. He had someone to have an eyes on you. Hogan actually had some WWF championship matches with then-champion Bob Backlund, and he started his first big feud with none other than Andre the Giant. which of course culminated in a match at Shea Stadium in August 1980. Hogan actually slammed Andre before the Pontiac match. Let's pull back the curtain a little bit. Before even then, Hogan slammed him, Tony Atlas slammed him, Stan Hansen slammed him. I'm pretty sure Jim Duggan slammed him. So it wasn't that huge.
Hell, even I slammed him.
Yeah, exactly. And during his run as a villain, Hogan, of course, was with Classy Freddy Blassie. You've seen the videos. He's got the cape. He's got the glasses. Freddy Blassie's behind him. It was part of the Freddy Blassie mystique that he discovered Hulk Hogan. During this initial run, he also appeared in New Japan. And they nicknamed him Ichiban, which meant number one. He faced opponents such as Tatsumi Fujinami and Abdullah the Butcher, both WWE Hall of Famers. And you've seen those videos of Hogan in Japan where he looks like a completely different guy wrestling. He used the Axe Bomber, which was his arm lariat, instead of the running leg drop. He also would do the head scissors, and it was crazy. He still made appearances for WWF, of course, challenging Pedro Morales for the Intercontinental title. Go check out our profile on him if you haven't already. And on June 2nd, 1983, Hogan became the first IWGP tournament winner and the first holder of the first version of the IWGP title by defeating Antonio Inoki by knockout. Hogan and Inoki also worked as partners in Japan. They actually won the Madison Square Garden Tag League Tournament 2 years in a row in 82 and 83. Hogan was big in Japan and stayed big in Japan up until his days of wrestling ended. Now we know the story why he left the WWF the first time. It confused myself when I was younger that he left WWF and came back because I didn't know about the AWA. I just knew about all this long lineage of Hulk Hogan. So I'm like, when did he leave? I don't understand. Left in 81. He made his debut. And he was a villain, of course. Luscious Johnny Valiant was his manager. But then Hogan became a fan favorite, beginning his multi-decade battle with the Heenan family, specifically Nick Bockwinkel. It was in this that in 82, Hogan defeated Bockwinkel and Bobby Heenan in a non-title handicap match, which set him up to challenge for the AWA Heavyweight Championship. The matches usually ended in DQs or dusty finishes. And in April of 82, Hogan actually defeated Bockwinkel and was declared the new champion, only for the decision to be overturned by AWA President Stanley Blackburn. Hogan would end up leaving in November of 83 because of these politics. But these politics started with Vern Gagne not really wanting to grow with the times. He wanted his champion to be a wrestler. He didn't like that this big, muscle-bound, charismatic guy was taking over the wrestling industry. He wanted you to be able to, you know, actually win a fight, which I get to some extent. But then again, if you're at a bar, are you going to challenge a, what, 6'9", 6'10", 24-inch python Hulk Hogan? I don't think so. And if you are, he hits you with one punch, you're probably going down. I don't know what Vern's worry was. The other issue, which he's touched on in documentaries and books, is he kept wrestling in Japan. He started putting his own shirts out, and Vern wanted 50% of the merchandise and the Japan money. This just was unheard of, and on top of not wanting to put the title on him, Hogan left. Vern goes on record of saying we didn't need him as champion. AWA lost a lot of people over time. But the ones that stick out in my head, you lost Hogan, you lost the Legion of Doom. And both of them, Vern said, they weren't real wrestlers. Imagine being able to have those two. They'd still not be in business. But, you know, that was Vern for you. Vincent Kay actually handpicked Hogan to be the showpiece for his new WWF territory. Hogan returned December 27th, 1983. It was on January 7th of 84 that he confirmed his fan favorite status by saving Bockwinkel. And he told to Bockwinkel, who he feuded with before, he's changed his way, great man. And then Bockwinkel said, he's told me he's not going to blast you around. It was 3 weeks later that Hogan won his first WWF title by pinning the Iron Sheik. Now, the storyline goes that he was the last-minute replacement for Bob Backlund, but we all know the difference in that, that it was rumored that Backlund did not want to drop the title to Hogan. And, or on the other side of it, Backlund wanted to be a heel. He wanted to start his, you know, lunatic gimmick he adapted in the 90s and then have a feud with Hogan. But, you know, the McMahon way just couldn't have it. Had to go heel babyface, which is something he continued for a long time. Kind of screwed Backlund in the long run because Backlund's whole gimmick was the All-American Boy. Hogan was the All-American Man. So I think this buried Backlund for a while. I think by Hogan winning the title that quickly, that started the beginning of the end for the AWA. They had another few good years left. But when a guy who you were toting as your number two goes and just takes the world by storm, it's not a good look. So you figure by this time, Hogan has won the IWGP Championship. He might as well have won the AWA title, even though they reversed it a week later. And now he's on the WWF title. This has been 7 years since he debuted. Roughly 5 after he made it to the big time in the WWF the first time. A lot of people question, you know, why Hogan was at the top so long. Why this, why that. I think these first few years truly show the magnitude of Hulk Hogan. Did you figure besides all this, as I said, the reason he left WWF the first time, he was brought in for Rocky III. So, I mean, he's appearing next to Sly Stallone. At one point or another, he's on your television set across the world, whether it's for AWA, New Japan, WWF. So even though Hulkamania truly kicked off with the pinning of the Iron Sheik, the fire had been building for many years. It was a slow build to the top, and one that I don't think fans nowadays would have been able to handle. I mean, it took him that long to finally get the WWF title. Whoa, why didn't he just win it instantly? Well, why, he has to scratch and claw? That's crazy. That's silly. I want to see my guy win it instantly and then get tired of him after a few months of holding it.
Yeah.
But, no, these beginnings of Hogan, I mean, just watching him progress, especially, I mean, like I said, his leg was broke, and then he hated his trainer. He didn't want to wrestle for him, and he took a sabbatical. There's a chance Hogan, in another alternate universe, Hogan never came back to wrestling. Wrestling is completely different. Who knows if it reached the magnitude it did?
I don't know. It depends. Like, who do you believe, you know? Does McMahon create another Hulkamania?
I don't think he can.
Like he says in some of his heel promos when they're leading up to, like, WrestleMania 19. I feel like somebody feels it.
I mean, at the time, I mean, Piper was a heel, and he always worked better as a heel. You had Andre, but Andre couldn't really talk, and he was more of an attraction.
Yeah, he's not going to be a superstar.
Yeah, Tito Santana, who is a good babyface, but he's not going to be the superstar. You had Junkyard Dog. Again, same thing, not going to be the guy. It was a couple years before Savage would show up. And they kind of screwed the pooch with Superstar Billy Graham by not letting him be a babyface. I think Billy Graham was the closest they had for a while. So I think you have a gap. I think the only one that would have picked it up and ran with it would have been Savage. And who knows, maybe if Savage would have been the top guy, he wouldn't have been jaded, and maybe yeah, he'd still be with the business today. Who knows? But it was Hogan. And, I mean, those beginning years, those beginning stages of Hulkamania, as I said, led to him pinning the Iron Sheik, led to Gorilla Monsoon, you know, Hulkamania is here, and then this led to WrestleMania 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. This led to the Rock and Wrestling Connection. This led to Hulk Hogan's Rock and Wrestling, the cartoon show. This led to Pastamania, brother. I mean, and the amount of people, the amount of feuds. Hulkamania was big.
Yeah.
And as I said at the beginning, to pretend, and I know he's become somewhat of a toxic figure as of late, between his comments before and now his lying ways. Like, notice I didn't mention him playing bass for Metallica. I know it's a little hard to like the man, but I think you have to respect the wrestling, especially the previous. If you want to say he politicked himself, you know, in the later years in the WCW, sure, go for it. Everyone did, though.
Yeah.
But at this time, like I said, all you have to hear is his leg was broke, and then he had to protect himself from getting it broke again. Clearly, even though the Briscoes wanted him in wrestling, everyone else didn't, from Matsuda to Gagne. But Hulk found his way, and Hulkamania was born, and now we are, and now here we are, 40 years later. And who knows, maybe he's got one more in him, brother.
People really responded to that really well.
I did. I'll go on record. Like I've said it before, there's certain theme songs, like when the Taker's gong goes off, the beginning of Cena's, Flair's to an extent now, Stone Cold's glass breaking, like the music hits, I'm like glued to the TV. If the Rumble happened and Real American started playing, I'd be like a kid again. I know he's not going to win. I know he's barely going to be able to hit his moves.
Doesn't he have a cane?
Yeah.
He's walking with a cane.
It's not going to happen. But just if it did, I'd enjoy it. He was always the one in my universe modes I'd have come back and be in the Rumble. But, you know, for another day. You know, like I said, Hulkamania was born. He had that great career up until, you know, towards the end of WCW. He even had a career renaissance. And then Hulk Hogan's going to Hulk Hogan. But that's for part two of this Hulk Hogan anniversary tale. And you know where to find part two as well as other content at?
Tell them.
You know, if you want the easy way, you go to our Linktree. Got our Facebook, which has some written pieces on it about old magazines, about wrestling in Detroit. It even has some news that we share. Sometimes we're the first to break it, or one of the first at least. There's our Instagram, which helps direct to all our other socials, as well as, you know, show some cool pictures from conventions and events we go to. Chose our Twitter, which I think out of the three we're the most active on, but pretty easy to hit that retweet button. Has our TikTok. Anthony's completely in control if I don't do TikTok.
He has no idea what I'm posting on.
Nope. There could just be he could just be ranting and raving about me. I have no idea. Hopefully someone would tell me, but I don't blame you if you don't. It would take you to our YouTube.
I hope somebody would tell you, because your wife just followed us. So.
Yeah, I saw that. She was excited we followed her, and I said, yep, wasn't me. But our YouTube, which is where you'll find some of our classic episodes that we've left up, we call it The Vault. We also have tier list, some PW profiles, as I mentioned, and we've slowly been uploading some of the more fun podcasts, kind of like this one. Or some of the old scriptures, or some ones like the terrible twist of fate of Matt Hardy, if you're interested in that. And finally, it shows where you can listen to our podcast, whether it be Spotify, Apple Podcast, we're everywhere. It also has our Etsy on there. I mean, if you don't have any PWP merch, what are you doing? Don't you want to represent? But as I said, this is only volume one. This is only part one of the Hulk Hogan journey. And I'm not going to bore you with, you know, the multiple WrestleMania runs, showing up in Florida on the Viper, debuting the New World Order. No, 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 no. You don't want to hear that. You don't want that from us.
You already know that.
You want old Hogan. Yeah. You want when he really started politicking, and I'm going to give it to you. So make sure you like, follow, and subscribe.